I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo,
a gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Good afternoon. Welcome to The Memo. It is Wednesday, June 22nd. We're here with another episode. I'm joined today by somebody much prettier than Brad Locke, Leslie Chris. I'm not saying that because she's my boss either.
Thank you so much for your...
You are nicer to look at than Brad.
Kind, but insincere.
No, they were very sincere.
Well, whatever.
I meant them, truthfully.
Okay.
How are you?
Appreciate it. I'm fine. I'm back from a week on the beach, so I'm trying to hold on to my...
That sounds relaxed, terrible.
My relaxed mode.
But, how's that working for you?
You know, it's Wednesday, so it's going a little bit, but...
You're halfway through the week.
I know, and I'm still relaxed.
That vein in your forehead's not coming out just yet.
So. Good.
You seem to be relaxed. You went on a senior trip.
I went on a senior trip.
To feel young?
No. I just did it to do a favor for my sister and my niece. They needed another car to haul girls, so mine went.
They needed another chaperone for the wild children.
But it was fun. They weren't wild. They were bookworms who read and hung out on the beach. And my only issue was that when I'm on the beach, I like to eat seafood and, you know, they wanted to go to Japanese steakhouse and places that aren't beach-like.
You can go that wherever.
I know.
You can't get Wenzel's or anything else.
It was their trip, so.
Chris probably hates Wenzel's.
I've never had Wenzel's.
That's the oyster house.
Yeah.
I've never had it either, but I do love oysters.
Chris hates most things.
Yeah. I'm a bitter person.
Are you a seafood eater?
He's very picky. He's very allergic.
Are you allergic to seafood?
I'm a little allergic, but I still like it. I mean, I've got to like it growing up in New Orleans, but I'm probably not as big of a seafood person as most people in New Orleans are.
He's the worst Louisianian.
Because of that,
ever.
Yeah.
Do you like oysters?
Take away. I do, but I haven't had oysters a lot. You know, and I think I'm fine with oysters. It's shrimp that'll it'll make my throat itchy, but I still...
Oh.
I had them when I was down in New Orleans last week. I just kind of... Pick my spots.
I just eat them until I start to close up right before I pass out. And then I back off. I'm like, that's too much. Did I say Louisianian, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's it. You nailed it.
Louisianiite.
But you don't say Louise. It's Louisiana.
Louisianiite.
Louisiana.
Louisianian.
You say Louise, too. Ian. Louisiana. Most people say Louisiana.
That's as many.
Mississippi. Louisiana. You lose some of the vowels.
Louisianian.
We're not losers. We're winners.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
She seems to be biting her tongue.
Yeah. You look like you had something,
sometimes
a thought forming.
No, just sometimes you just not, no point in arguing. I love New Orleans, so.
I like that segue. I love New Orleans. Don't argue with me. I love New Orleans. I bought... shrimp for Chris one time as an appetizer when we went out to eat, and he sat there and ate it until
I
realized something was wrong, and he was like, I'm allergic. I was like, why are you eating it?
Oh my gosh.
But I can't. I mean, it's
that's
good.
That's
life is too
Chris
rich.
Chris Kiefer to a fault. He's too nice.
No, like, ambulance was called.
No, it's living life to the fullest. So
I wouldn't go call an ambulance. He could have told
me
up front.
It's not that bad of an allergy that you just completely.
No, it usually isn't. The worst, it actually happened here. One time I had, it was raw shrimp kebabs. And so I guess I had it all over my hand, and I probably rubbed my eye, and I came in the next day. I don't know if you remember this.
I do probably remember.
3 or 4 years ago. My eye was, like, almost swollen shut.
Yeah, I do remember.
That's
I'm fine.
I don't think I realized that it was shrimp that did it,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, that's the only really bad.
I thought you got stung by 100 bees. But
I've had. Yeah, it looked that way.
I'm glad
but
I'm not allergic
usually
to shrimp.
My throat just gets real scratchy, and I just stop eating when that happens.
I just pass
it
out. It's fine after that. When I wake up, I'm good to go again. Give me another basket of shrimp.
Make sure I've got some Benadryl nearby just in case.
We want to remind you that you can come to the Daily Journal's Reader's Choice Awards ceremony on Thursday night. That's tomorrow night. The event begins at 6 p.m. at the Bancorp South Arena. The cost is $30, and it includes food by South and a drink voucher, as well as live music. The Daily Journal is going to present its Reader's Choice winners in 110 different categories. This year, we had 164,000 votes by more than 7,000 voters.
That's going to be a long event, I would think.
We're going to name off all 7,000 voters and thank them for their patronage. No, we're not going to do that. But for $30, you will get to find out who won in 110 different categories with live music, food, and adult beverages.
Yeah, I know Lauren's been working on some videos for that. This should be pretty good, too.
So head over to Bancorp South Arena tomorrow night. You can purchase tickets in advance. Check out djournal.com for more information about that. We got a full show today. William Moore is going to be joining us, as well as Caleb Bedillion, Zach Osborne, and it's Wednesday. Let's see if Jenna Parsons brought us some food. I'm going to guess probably not.
Probably not.
Probably not. But today's show is sponsored by Shoppers Value Foods, formerly known as Palmer's. The locally owned grocery store still offers high quality selection, great customer service, and low prices. You can visit Shoppers Value Foods on East Main.
I like that grocery store.
You do?
It's my neighborhood grocery store.
So you frequent
it. It's quick. It's, you know, if I need something quickly or if I'm on my way home, I whip in there, and they've done a lot of work, and it's just much nicer, and the prices I've noticed are lower than they once were.
That's a win-win.
Yeah. People are friendly, and it's just nice having a little grocery store that close to home.
I was going to ask, you went there a lot. When it was Palmer's,
I did.
I'm assuming, is it, do you know, I mean, is there much difference? The prices, is that kind of the
I
main thing?
I have noticed a difference.
Does it look
prices.
Different? Or?
Yeah, they started doing some, you know, some work in the store before I knew that, you know, about the change. They just kind of spruced it up a little, and it's nice. It was nice anyway, but, I mean, it's Palmer's, but it's just a nice little neighborhood store, and I have found the prices seem to be much better now, much lower. I did something cool for lunch today.
You did.
I went to the Lee County Library's Lunching with Books, which they do once a month. And my friend and our columnist, Rita Grimsley Johnson, was there holding forth on her new book, which is called The Dogs Buried Over the Bridge, A Memoir in Dog Years. And I have a copy, right, but I haven't read it yet because dog books make me sad. And I've been to her house, Fish Trap Hollow in Iuka, and I know the bridge, and I know that over the bridge is a dog cemetery. So it's just I have to psych myself up to plunge into a book about dogs. Beloved pets who are no longer with us.
Where can one purchase this book?
I'm sure one can purchase it at Reed's bookstore, and I would say probably anywhere, any bookstores.
All right.
She's kind of been making the rounds in Mississippi doing book signings, and she's already been to Reed's, so I know they have them there.
All right. Good deal. Gonna go ahead and get started today. William Moore joining us now to discuss updates on this incident this past weekend in Lee Acres, this officer-involved shooting. William, how are you doing today?
Doing good.
Family held a press conference. Antoine Shumpert's family held a press conference. Where was that at? City Hall?
It was at City Hall. They met with the mayor, the deputy police chief, chief operations. They met with several city officials yesterday for a lengthy period of time, late morning through the early afternoon, and then they held a press conference there at City Hall around 4 o'clock yesterday.
Yeah. What was kind of the, you were there, what was kind of the air of things there?
Basically, the family was saying, you know, that they still have a lot of questions that hadn't been answered. I mean, they want the city to answer the questions. They called for federal investigation into the situation, and, you know, basically said, all right, well, if this doesn't work out the way that we think it should, you know, we're willing to file a federal civil rights lawsuit.
Yeah.
You know, but while the city is basically, their stance has been, they're going to sit back and let Mississippi Bureau of Investigations handle the case. They're going to not comment on it. They're not releasing any information. They're going to let the outside agency totally investigate it. And then when they come up with their findings, then, you know, they'll release it. Whereas the family was wanting more answers, and they actually, I mean, they released a little more information now because, I mean, the family attorney was the one who pointed out that while the victim was black, the officer was white. You know, and according to the attorney, the Antoine Shumpert was unarmed, and was shot at least four times.
Yeah. I believe they said three to the head and...
Three to the chest and one to the stomach.
Yeah. One to the stomach.
The family, you know, admits that he did run, but they were just saying he was running for his life.
Other things that I heard come out during that one that have not been addressed by the police or anything else, they were saying that there's nowhere on that block that he could have hit under a house. Whether or not that's
the family's attorney, Carlos Moore, disputed the city's official press release from Monday saying that Schumpert was hiding up under a house.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he came out from under the house, he attacked the officer and the dog. And Carlos Moore said, you know, that the houses on that street are all conventional concrete slabs.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're concrete slab foundations. They're not conventional wood floors, so there's no place to hide.
No,
but if you drive, because of the hilly nature of that street, there are several houses that do appear to have conventional foundations. There are ones with crawl spaces. There are ones with like carports / basements, and there's ones with raised decks where, I mean, there are several places that someone could hide.
Yeah. Other thing that came out that caught my attention was he pulled out a jump drive saying there was a video, allegedly, of the incident.
There's a video of the initial part of the incident. There was a traffic stop near or somewhere in the area of the intersection of Harrison and Van Buren. It was at that point where he pulled over, jumped out of the car, and ran. The passenger stayed in the car. There was a house in that area that had a home surveillance system, and they had video of Schumpert pulling over and getting out of his car and running. You know, and then there was no actual video of the shooting, though.
Yeah, yeah. So we're not sure where it goes from there.
And then, you know, the other question was, what the folks had brought up was, all right, well, police camera. I mean, the police cars do have in-car cameras, but once they left the car on a foot chase, there wouldn't be any video of that. And
right.
Tupelo Police do not have body cameras at this point.
At this point in time. Anything else come out yesterday that we weren't aware of based on their press conference?
Basically, I mean, right now it's sort of a wait and see, trying to figure out, you know, how much information is going to be trickled out. You know, the Schumpert was supposed to, there was supposed to be an autopsy on his body yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any toxicology reports will take another couple of weeks at least. That's just the nature of the beast.
Right.
So, I mean, it's going to be a lot of hurry up and wait. And, you know, basically the city officials and, you know, the family to some point yesterday still asked for folks to remain calm and try not to spread disinformation on social media, just fanning the flames and getting people upset. It
does seem to be a lot of that. Going on.
There has been a lot of things. I mean, that was one of the things at the Monday press conference that Chris Traylor, who actually apparently is related to Antoine Schumpert, was saying. And, you know, he was saying basically, we don't need fiction. You know, we just need facts. You know, let the investigation run its course. Then we can, you know, raise questions if we don't believe what they say.
Yeah. Other thing I saw being asked for pretty heavily was the identity of the officer that has not been revealed yet.
That's actually pretty standard.
Yeah, yeah.
Not to release the name of the officer until, you know, they're cleared. And a lot of times they won't release the name even after they're cleared.
Right.
The officer's off, you know, on administrative leave. The attorney yesterday, the way he phrased it was he was in hiding. Don't know that, you know, he's actually in hiding.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just...
They were protecting him, as
right.
I've said several times. So, well, this is going to definitely, like you said, a lot more information will trickle out in the days to come. But it's...
I was going to say, William, one thing I thought was interesting, you were talking to me about it yesterday, is just the investigation. How long does that usually take?
Investigations will take anywhere from 2 weeks to 2 months. I mean, a lot of times it all depends on the toxicology. You know, when they get down to the state lab, they'll take blood, you know, and they'll do tests to see, you know, if they're under the influence of any drugs. And that normally takes a couple of weeks. The actual process of interviewing folks, I mean, can normally be done, you know, in a handful of days, you know, because there weren't that many folks. You know, this is a small area. And, you know, the incident was confined to, you know, one city block. So basically, you know, they can knock on doors and talk to everybody who was there, get all that information, and it's just going to be a matter of assembling everything.
All right, William, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to.
The Daily Journal is excited to announce a change on our website that will allow more people to consume as much of our content as they want. We recently have removed our paywall, and djournal.com is now free from the first click to the last. We also have increased our multimedia content by launching new products ranging from videos to webcasts. The website complements our print product, the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. Visit djournal.com to stay informed on the latest news in Northeast Mississippi. Whether you want a recipe for tonight's dinner or details on the city's plan to revitalize neighborhoods, you can find it all in one place. There's no limit to what you can do at djournal.com. So come and stay a while and leave informed about the communities we serve.
Also on djournal.com, you can look for the two sports podcasts we produce here. Prep Rally is a high school sports podcast with Brad Locke and Gene Phelps. New episodes air every Wednesday. You can watch the webcast live at around 11 a.m. at djournal.com, and the podcast version drops later that day. You can listen to it free in iTunes, podcast apps, or at preprally.djournal.com. There will not be an episode this week, however, because Brad is out and Gene is on vacation. Ole Miss and Mississippi State fans can also check out the Double Coverage podcast. Ole Miss beat reporter Parrish Alford and MSU reporter Logan Lowry release a new episode each Thursday afternoon in which they provide game previews, insight, commentary, and analysis on the Bulldogs and Rebels. Listen to it for free on iTunes, podcast apps, or at doublecoverage.djournal.com. All right, Caleb Bedillion joining us now. He's not the crocodile hunter, but he is here to talk about dangerous animals. You are not the crocodile hunter, correct? But I don't want to.
I'm afraid not.
Allegedly, you are not the replacement crocodile hunter. City Council was met to discuss formal changes to the dangerous animals ordinance. Some of that changed. Some of it did not, apparently, for you.
Well, technically, nothing has changed.
Nothing
yet,
has changed.
Derek, so, you know, nothing to see here. Moving along.
Moving along.
But, yeah, so the city has a dangerous animals ordinance. It's had one since about 1999, and according to current practice, the Lee Tupelo Humane Society administers the ordinance. So the way it works is a dangerous animal is defined thusly: any pit bull or any animal that behaves in a dangerous fashion.
It's very
so.
I wonder why that's specific towards that and nothing. Okay, never mind.
Well, Councilman Markle Whittington has some questions about that, but we'll get there. We'll get there. So if you have a pit bull or a pit bull mix or something like that in the city of Tupelo, according to the ordinance, you must register the animal as a dangerous animal. According to the ordinance, it's a $50 fee. The Humane Society has been charging $75. The ordinance is, you know, old, so they were updating the fee there. And the Humane Society's current practice is to insert a microchip into the animal. And then if you have a dog that has, you know, actually attacked someone or something like that, it becomes a dangerous animal and you have to register it. So originally, just to kind of clean things up a little bit and bring the ordinance and current practice into conformity with each other, the city had put before the council an update that would just reflect the fee that's actually being charged right now of $50 to $75. Mm-hmm. It would explicitly make a provision for the implantation of the microchip, and it would explicitly identify the Humane Society as the agency responsible for administering the ordinance. Now, once things got rolling, councilmen started talking about bigger changes. And really, as I said, the guy kind of on the edge of this has been a Councilman Markle Whittington. He's got lots of ideas here. One, he has proposed that every animal in Tupelo be registered. He thinks this, you know, registering the dangerous animals is difficult to enforce. If people don't do it voluntarily, there's really no way to police it unless an animal actually does cause a problem, and then, you know, presumably someone will make a complaint about it. So he thinks it'd be easier and bring in money for the Humane Society just to require every person with a pet in Tupelo to register the animal. And the first time he mentioned this, he suggested a $50 registration fee. The next time, he lowered that significantly to $10. With a cap, like a $50 cap for a household.
And so somebody who owns lots of vets, I'm going to tell you, that ain't going to fly right now.
Yeah, see, I kind of figured that the feedback on this would be pretty negative, but he keeps bringing it up. So I just don't know if no one's heard about it and he's not getting any feedback, or if he...
Maybe, I mean, has any town like ever in the United States said you have to have an animal registered in this town?
Yes, I think Starkville actually has a system like this.
I don't remember that in Starkville, and it happened after I left, but that just seems very excessive. But
whatever. Well, anyway, so that's his idea. He also thinks there's no reason to identify the pit bull by name in the ordinance.
I agree with that.
And thinks we ought to just leave it. If we are going to have just a registration requirement for dangerous animals and not citywide, just make it, if the animal causes a problem, it has to be registered. Let's not preemptively target the pit bulls.
Rachel Allred, Director of Operations for the Humane Society, was in attendance at the meeting, stating that over the last 10 years, approximately 200 animals have been registered in Tupelo. I mean, I'm assuming just because of the pit bull reference, it is.
Well, actually, what she said, and this was, so she was at the Monday council agenda review. Okay. So this wasn't actually a meeting, but she was present, and what she told me was that the majority of animals that have been registered due to complaints. Very few people voluntarily bring in their animal and say, hey, I've got a pit bull. I know it's supposed to be registered. Here it is. Whether that's just because people don't know about the requirements or people just realize no one's really driving around looking to see whether every pit bull in the city has been registered. So most people don't do it. The majority of animals that are registered are ones that have caused a problem. Usually a problem that required animal control to get involved.
And then Councilman Whittington just decided that it should be $150 to register.
So he's got, like I said, lots of ideas in play. His ideal, I think, is that every animal would be registered. If that's not going to happen and it's just going to be the dangerous animals that are registered, one, he doesn't want to selectively target the pit bulls, and two, he still thinks, you know, if it's just going to be the dangerous animals, 75 is not enough to cover the city, you know, the Humane Society's cost, and thereby the city's cost, and say partially fund the Humane Society. So he suggested $150, but then to complicate things further, also suggested like some kind of sliding scale. If you got a super dangerous animal that takes a lot of work to restrain, then that might be one. 50.
Tweety Bird's only $5.
But yeah, small little animal that can be easily dealt with. Maybe that would just be $75.
And then, quote Whittington, if we had registration of all animals and charged $10 per animal with a cap of $50 per household, for you math enthusiasts, that means you only get 5 animals. I think you can fund the animal shelter.
Well, I think what he means is if you had like 7 animals, you'd have to register them all, but you would pay no more than $50. In other words, so if you're like a super animal enthusiast and you have like 10 cats, you're only going to have to pay $50, not
I don't have 10
the,
cats.
The $100 that you know. I know you don't, dare, but I guarantee you some do.
I don't have some cats. Some do. I don't like cats. They're lovely creatures. They're just not for me or my allergies. So, all right. Well, good information coming out of this. Also, more references to the Humane Society. That's a city-owned building, but the...
Yeah, they
continually are giving money to the shelter through the city each year.
Right now, the city council has approved formally a $500,000 to go to the Humane Society for their new shelter. It'll be paid out $100,000 per year over the next 5 years. Expecting an announcement fairly soon from the Humane Society about ready to begin construction on new shelter.
Finally.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a long time, about 10 years in the making. They've been raising money for this.
I went in your stead last week to do Pets of the Week, and the air conditioning units were not working. Yeah, it was very warm in there. So let's hope they can get some new facilities. All right, Caleb, thanks for joining us. Right,
thanks, Derek.
A reminder, you can watch the Daily Journal's Capital View webcast each Monday afternoon at djournal.com. Capital Bureau Chief Bobby Harrison provides commentary and analysis on the issues being debated in Jackson. Watch live on Monday afternoons at 2 p.m. or catch the replay later in the day. The 2016 legislative session is now over, but Bobby will continue to provide perspective about the news coming out of the state capitol. Time now for today's news memo. For more on these stories, read the Daily Journal or visit djournal.com. Mississippi Attorney General Jim Hood said a lawsuit may be filed if his official opinions are ignored. Hood met with the media on Monday to explain those opinions that detail how the Budget Transparency and Simplification Act, passed during the 2016 legislative session, does not provide as much money for the state budget as legislative leaders said it would when it passed. Official opinions issued by the Office of the Attorney General do not carry the weight of law, but protect public officials who adhere to them from liability in court proceedings. Hood's opinion creates more uncertainty for a state budgeting process that has been rocked with sluggish revenue collections and a $56 million accounting error.
Mississippi ranked 50th in the National Kids Count 2016 data book for the third year in a row. The state did make gains in several categories on the annual report card that measures childhood well-being. Kids Count is a project of the Annie E. Casey Foundation. It has ranked states annually since 1990 on child well-being using an index of key indicators related to health, education, economics, and family and community life. Mississippi has ranked 50th overall each year except in 2013 when New Mexico was last. Mississippi Kids Count Director Linda Southward said the state is making improvements, but its baseline is lower than other states.
Tupelo's Parks and Recreation Department has extended registration for fall activities by a week. Fall activities include youth soccer, flag football, and cheerleading. The department hopes the deadline extension means an increase in participation numbers. Beginning last year, Tupelo Parks and Rec phased out paper forms used to register for activities. It now uses an online system called Blue Sombrero. That system can be accessed from the City of Tupelo's website at tupelomss.gov. The registration cannot currently be completed from a smartphone, but city officials hope Blue Sombrero will fix that soon.
Houston voters approved a new tourism tax on Tuesday night. Voters cast 435 ballots for the proposed 2% tax, and 196 voted against it. The city has presented a three-year plan and list of projects to be funded by the levy. It includes money for parks and recreation, sidewalks around the square, advertising the community, the Tanglefoot Trail, and beautification. It also will form a 15-member tourism advisory committee to help aldermen with future projects. This was Houston's second attempt to pass the tax, with last August's vote failing by just three votes. The referendum will now levy a 2% tax on restaurants and motels. It is expected to raise about $160,000 annually.
Monday's long-anticipated opening of the I-65 and I-22 interchange in Birmingham completes the link between Memphis and Atlanta through Northeast Mississippi. The Birmingham interchange was the largest single contract in Alabama Department of Transportation history. Interstate 22 follows the route of U.S. Highway 78. Until Monday, motorists had to take Colburg Road to Daniel Payne Drive to link up to Interstate 65 and 20 in Birmingham.
Today's show is sponsored by Shoppers Value Foods, a locally owned grocery store on East Main. The store recently changed its name from Palmer's, but the owners and the employees haven't changed. Damon Palmer and his brother Jason are the third generation owners of the East Tupelo grocery store that was founded in 1957. The Palmer brothers have teamed up with last year's Grocery Wholesaler of the Year and decided to go with their Cost Plus program. The store now sells its groceries 10% over cost. That has allowed it to add more variety, especially in the meat, produce, and dairy departments. Along with the name change came a refreshing of the interior, new signs, and better parking. Visit Shoppers Value Foods for high-quality selection, great customer service, and low prices. Welcome, Zach Orsborn.
Hey, Leslie Chris.
How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm all right. I read your story here about Hyperion Technology Group, and I felt like I was sort of reading something out of a science fiction novel.
I know. They gave me a tour of it, and I felt all the stuff they were telling me, I was like, how is this happening in Tupelo?
It's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm, it is.
But it's tell us a little bit about exactly what it is they do.
Okay. Well, their flagship project since day one has been these infrasound sensors, which kind of monitors low-frequency sounds that we can't hear. And they use it for domestic threat detection, gunshot detection. And so once it hears a gunshot, it automatically goes off and alerts people. And they've used these sensors with the U.S. military. And they also use these sensors for researchers. They put them around volcanoes and to detect when that's going to go off, and they detect tsunamis. So their main motivation is pretty much helping people, whether it's domestic homeland security or international security, or they're always about finding a new solution to make people's lives easier and more safe.
I sort of understood all the part about the tsunamis and the volcanoes and how that could happen, but the part about the gunshot was a little confusing to me.
Yeah. Well, they're working on a sensor right now that are going to go in movie theaters, because of the shootings in movie theaters that have happened. And their technology is so advanced, they can... If a movie is playing on screen and it's like a James Bond movie and it has gunshots, the sensor can tell the difference between the gunshots on the screen and the gunshots in real life. And the sensors are right now kind of important, especially with the shooting in Orlando. And I went into the interview blindly. I didn't really know what kind of technology they had. And then he brought up Orlando and how he wished that the sensors would have been there to kind of set off an alarm and get a quicker response with that kind of stuff. And he wants his technology in more places.
So I guess the first gunshot would trigger the, put out a call for emergency personnel.
Yeah, immediately. Mm-hmm.
So it'd be a quicker response is the idea.
Yeah, instead of like...
someone having to call 911.
Exactly. Right. You know, if there's no police there or no security there, it can automatically just alert cops or stuff like that.
And how long did you say Hyperion's been?
They've been around for 7 years, and they have 25 employees. And it's a really cool lab they have. They have they work on automotive industry, U.S. military. A bunch of different kind of industries, and there's one engineer, Daryl Winstead. He was working on something for automotive industry, and he had to have a solution because they had like 1,000 brand new vehicles on hold because of a problem, and he had to fix it immediately. And they're quick paced, and they all work together to find solutions to all these companies' problems.
Well, I'm glad you did the story because I had no idea that this was even in Tupelo.
Mm-hmm. I think Dennis did a couple stuff back in the past when they first started, but I wanted to see where they are now. And they have 40 active contracts with the government, military, and the industrial realm. And right now they're focusing on the movie theater sensor, and they're trying to... they are a little challenged because we're in Mississippi and we don't have as many resources, but he believes that eventually one day Mississippi could be the next kind of technology hub.
That'd be great. Mm-hmm. Maybe we could be first in something.
Hopefully.
Thanks, Zach.
No problem. Thank you.
We're joined now by Jenna, not Gina, Parsons, food editor. Morning, Jenna.
Good morning, Leslie.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
This has just turned into the delicious dish on NPR.
We have to have sound in the background of, pots and pans rattling and things like that. I enjoyed your...
Order up!
There you go. I enjoyed very much reading about Sherry McNeese Gregory and her caramel cake. Using the Kraft caramels. I've never seen that before.
That's the first time for me, too. Most of the recipes are the old-fashioned, have the brown sugar in one skillet and the other boil. Or sometimes I even get the one with the sweetened condensed milk where you boil it in the can, which scares me.
I know. My mother never would let me do that. She said it was dangerous.
But, yeah, this is the first time with the Kraft caramels.
Tell me about Sunday. Is it Sunday dinners at her house? Doesn't she have her family? She has her family, I believe.
It's actually at her dad's house, and it's the house where she was born and raised, obviously her parents' house. And Sunday dinner was a tradition in the family. Everybody was expected there. You had to have a pretty good excuse not to show up. And her mom always did it all. And then after her mom died in 2005, she realized that if the tradition were going to continue, that she was going to have to do something about it. So they still have it at her dad's house, but now she and her siblings take the food and prepare it and have it for it's in the evening meal. They go to her in-laws for lunch, but they go to daddy's for dinner.
That's a lot of folks to cook for every Sunday, 16 to 25.
It is, and she not only cooks for them, but once a week she still goes to her dad's, I think it's on Tuesday morning, she goes over there and makes him breakfast, whatever he wants for breakfast, and that's their time together. Oh. She was going every day after her mom died, but she works full-time at Ross & Yerger, where she's an administrative assistant, so she had to cut it to once a week. But they are big on family.
Well, it sounds like it. I liked her recipe for the pork loin with rosemary sauce. I'm going to try that myself.
That did look good, didn't it?
It did. You also wrote about Magnolia Seasoning in West Point, which was a very interesting story because I didn't really know that that was something that happened in West Point.
I didn't know it either. I had written a story back for Memorial Day about grilling vegetables, and in the recipe, I put that I had seasoned them with Cavender's Greek seasoning. And about 2 days later, I got a letter from the president of Magnolia Seasoning, Barry Zook, and he said, you know, we make a Greek seasoning that's just as good as Cavender's, and we're right in your backyard. Mm-hmm. And every time you use a recipe and you say Cavender's or McCormick or whatever, you know, we do the same things. Come give us a try. And he actually sent me a bottle of a greens seasoning.
Huh.
So Adam Robison, one of our photographers, and I went over to West Point last week and spent a couple of hours in the plant. And it was amazing. It's all done by hand. It's just five people. And there's no assembly line. There's no big whoopty machinery. It's just five people who care a lot about what they do. And it's actually, I've tried a few of them, but I can tell you the lemon pepper is the best lemon pepper I have ever. I was licking the top of the jar.
Where can you find it?
You can find it in independent grocery stores. And in fact, when I was in Todd's yesterday, I looked on their shelf and they have four or five different spices. And the container says Todd's Big Star.
Okay.
But it's made by Magnolia Seasoning in West Point. And they also, I'm sure that Palmer's now, Shopper Values Foods, they have some of those seasonings in there. And Save-A-Lot that's over in East Tupelo has some there. And as he said, if you've ever eaten barbecue in Tupelo at a restaurant, you've tasted his product.
That's kind of cool to know. I'm going to look for it because I love lemon pepper, and I always buy Lowry's because that's just what I have always bought.
But well, everybody's touting local, you know, locally sourced meat and locally sourced vegetables. Why not buy a product that, and let me also say that, and I'm not dissing McCormick or Lowry's or anybody else, but when you go to your grocery store and you buy a little jar of spices that's about 2 ounces and it's $5, this is, I don't know how many ounces, I would say it's got to be 2 cups, and it's $3.99, and it's...
So it's more economical, too.
And it's a quality product, and I can't sing their praises enough, and he was such a nice man on his third retirement.
Well, you have sold me on them. I'm going to start looking for their products at my neighborhood grocery store. And let's talk about Aunt Polly in your column.
Good old Aunt Polly. Bless her soul. She was not a mayonnaise-y person, and so when she made potato salad, she made a German potato salad, and my mother's potato salad had mayonnaise and mustard and eggs and pickles, but Aunt Polly's, it was liquidy, and it was served hot, and it was sliced potatoes, and I remember purple onions and a real vinegary dill kind of tart taste, but salty, savory. And of course, nobody bothered to get the recipe, so I guess it went to the grave with her. But when I got ready to make a German potato salad last weekend because my husband Charlie wanted bratwurst, Google German potato salad, and the same recipe kept popping up, and I thought, well, this must be it, and I made it, and it wasn't it, but it was good, but it's basically potatoes with kind of a sweet and sour dressing with the sugar and the vinegar, but then it's got onion sautéed in bacon. So yeah, there you go, and bacon crumbles. It was good, and it was better the next day. It will not be my go-to potato salad, but it was good and it was different, and I'll make it again. But I'm still looking for Aunt Polly's, that recipe. So if anybody knows how to make, maybe hers is more of a Bavarian potato salad. Maybe I need to Google that and see what comes up.
Well, it sounds good to me and interesting because, you know, I'm not a mayonnaise kind of person either.
Yes, I'm aware.
And I do like vinegar, so I might try it. Or if you find one that you like better, you can share that one.
I will. I'm sorry I didn't bring y'all any today. There were actually leftovers in the fridge. Derek, I'm getting the dagger stare. The dagger stare from Derek.
It's just sadness. That's all it is behind these eyes. Just desperation. And I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Maybe next week.
That's pitiful.
She says that every week.
I know I do. But, you know, it could be the next week.
It could be. You
know, and I'm not Jenna, and I'm not the food editor, and I'm not vying for attention or anything, but I do have some fresh-picked blueberries that we have had an abundance of on our three little bushes this year, and I'm going to make some homemade blueberry muffins and bring them for everyone someday. Or I may just bring them in here for y'all and invite Jenna and a few others so I don't have to make so many.
Please don't do that, because then that makes me look bad.
Well,
do it.
Well, that's what I meant to say. I wasn't trying to make you look bad. I just want to get rid of some of my blueberries. I'm proud of my crop.
They would be most welcome.
Well, thank you, Jenna. We'll look forward to what you have going next week.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Once again, we remind you that today's show is sponsored by Shoppers Value Foods. The Palmer brothers have worked hard on improving every area of the store to make customers' experiences even better than before and to save them money on quality name brand products. Visit the locally owned grocery store on East Main Street. You'll love the look, love the prices, and get help by the same people you knew at Palmer's. And by the way, you can find the West Point Magnolia Seasonings at Palmer's. The store formerly known as Palmer's, and other ingredients that you read about in Wednesday's food section.
That name's going to take a little bit to sink in.
It is. I think
a lot of people, especially you going to Palmer's for so long, I'm sure it's always going to be Palmer's in your mind.
Shoppers Value Foods.
We also want to remind you, you can come to the Daily Journal's Reader's Choice Award ceremony on Thursday night.
Yes, you can.
The event begins at 6 p.m. at the Bancorp South Arena. The cost is $30 and includes food by South, a drink voucher. I don't know why I keep picking your pen up, Leslie. I'm sorry. As well as live music. The Daily Journal will present its Reader's Choice winners in 110 different categories. Had nearly 165,000 votes cast this year. So
that's fairly amazing.
Thursday, 6 p.m., Bancorp South Arena, $30. Come and enjoy. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Can we make this happen from here on out?
From here on out?
Mm-hmm. Permanent.
What about Brad? Well, he's just moving into a new house. He's not moving away.
He doesn't have to come back. We can do this without
him. I'm not saying this, Brad. It's others who are saying this. It's your cohort, your daily cohort.
He says about me when Emma and Lauren are in here.
Sure, I'll take his place.
Yay! It's official. All right. Back tomorrow with a new episode. Is he going to be here tomorrow? Leslie going to be here tomorrow?
Can you be here tomorrow?
Sure.
That makes my week. That makes my week right there. Back on Thursday with Leslie Chris. That's reason enough to tune in. We'll see you then. Don't forget to find us online at memo.djournal.com. Also, all the stories we discussed today, you can read about on djournal.com or in your copy of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. For the latest in breaking news, follow us online at Twitter at djournal now. We'll see you again on Thursday.
Stay cool. It's hot.